This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, although not the pre-Christmas episode we've been planning, with over half the games from the EFL's previous round of fixtures falling victim to the sudden surge in coronavirus figures that's engulfed the whole country. But just like the world's original league competition itself's been doing since 1888, we shall soldier on and try and bring you some general reflections on the season to date as it heads towards its halfway point on the official EFL podcast. And in such times of festive challenge, who better to help us lay a light dusting of snow on a bleak landscape than the former Nottingham Forest, Southampton, Leeds United, Colchester United, Swindon Town, Sheffield Wednesday, Scunthorpe United and Coventry City midfielder, now Sky Sports main presenter David Prutton. And just before we talk of serious matters, just on a festive theme, David, it is the pantomime season, etc. When does Christopher Biggins want his glasses back, would be my first question. Is this a recent addition to your armoury? I spotted them for the first time myself as I tuned into the highlights of Middlesbrough's victory over Bournemouth at the weekend, but I'd not seen them before.
No, well, what happened, I managed to spend 15 years playing football. Every time I turned out one side and shelled the ball over the winger's head, it's because I couldn't see him, which I've only really found out latterly. But I actually wear one contact lens, which is ridiculous, but ran out. So this is the backup bins.
I see. So this was a recent addition to your armoury, the actual wearing of glasses on television. I wasn't sure if it was something that had been going on all season, but I'd tuned in at that point.
Very recent. And given the ebb and flow of what we do, Clem, I'm sure you can relate to this. At the beginning, there's a novelty interest taken by friends and family alike. It then it's a lull where they completely ignore and disregard what you do. And then suddenly these go on and suddenly you get text messages going, oh, how long have you been wearing? And I mean, that's from the nicer end of the spectrum all the way down to what would be termed playground insults. But we're all bigger than that, aren't we?
We are indeed. There is just a moment in our profession, though, and this is the broadcast side of things. And I had it myself where I would find myself in the final studio squinting at the video printer to see somebody behind my ear would be going, there's a third goal for Mansfield. And I'd be like, I can't see that. Or if they put anything on auto cue on the jib camera, which is like about 100 miles away. I'm like, and it's the smallest screen imaginable. Little insights behind the trade, David.
The magic of TV.
Indeed. I mean, what a confusing situation.
Yes.
I guess the bit I can't quite fathom is I've had so many projects on. I was a bit late watching last weekend's highlights. That's the weekend of the 11th highlights. And then when I did it, it was like 6 days later, and I thought, oh, my goodness me. The landscape in the space of a week, rather like what's happened to the country, has completely changed. I mean, it's
crazy.
Bewildering that, you know, those 19 fixtures called off, etc.
In such quick rhythm. But then, does it reflect what we see on a daily basis? Without trying to get too deep and meaningful straight away about it, or sorry, too political straight away about it. There's always been, with what we've all had to endure for the last 2 years, that element of the unknown. And just when you think, as we all do, that there's an element of it being relatively predictable, and I say that in the loosest possible sense, suddenly something else happens and you kind of almost feel like we're all reverting back to square one. So, I mean, this week has been crackers, really. I was working during the week, so I was down in Norwich on Tuesday night, which thankfully travelling from North Yorkshire didn't get called off 2 hours before kickoff, because that is one hell of a trek back. But on the Wednesday, going up to Burnley, pulling into the outskirts of Burnley from where I live up in Harrogate, it came through at 5 o'clock that the game had been called off. Now, I think we'd gotten used to games being moved or games being adjusted. But I think with what we've seen in the last week or so, I think the time frames was what's really surprised and shocked people. With look at the games of the weekend, 2 hours notice, 2.5 hours notice, 3 hours notice, that in professional football has always been relatively unheard of, hasn't it? And that's what really kind of puts it into perspective, how unknown and unpredictable this whole situation is.
Yeah, but to that end, do we need to praise the EFL that their 19 postponed matches were all done 24 hours beforehand?
Well, yeah.
And we didn't have that situation in the Premier League where, let's be frank, supporters were turning up at a Premier League game, probably haven't taken personal risk themselves through transport systems to get to the game, to find there was no reward at the end of it for the risks that they'd taken.
But also as well, the preparation that goes into it. I saw some scenes outside Elland Road on Saturday tea time, and you understand what a match day is like. We all do, don't we? It's busy. It's when things are relatively normal, it's busy, it's buzzing outside. But it's the first time I've seen big long queues, because everyone kind of goes in at their own pace and it's all very straightforward. But then you kind of stood there thinking, well, it's got to be that way because of the protocols that have been put in place now. And credit to the fans that were getting in there. There were queues of people, but it was moving relatively quickly. There were there was nobody stepping, I mean, not only literally, but figuratively stepping out of line. Everyone seemed to be understanding of the situation, because at the end of it is a chance to go and watch your heroes in action. But I think with regards to how the EFL have handled it, and this is always the thing when it comes to discussing our governing body, that we've, like I said, I've been involved in it for a long time, both playing and having the privilege of speaking to people at the EFL over the past 7-8 years doing the job that I do. And they always operate under that comparison with the Premier League, where the Premier League has 20 clubs to look after, and the EFL has a lot more than that. So when it comes to jurisdiction, when it comes to plate spinning, when it comes to making sure that every single body of people in each and every club, and that includes fans as well as the paramount parts of it, then it's what they've managed to do in the week that we've seen, and then moving forward, and obviously the health and safety of everybody involved at the very top of that tree. I think it's been moved into action and motion, and it's been put together pretty quickly.
I mean, the key messages from the EFL themselves are to everybody, but particularly the players, but obviously they're spreading the word about supporters as well, is get vaccinated if you haven't been, have your booster if you haven't been, and obviously be prepared as well with all the protocols for entering stadiums with the new restrictions, or showing COVID passports, or having your lateral flow in your pocket, etc. I suppose the headline news as we record this edition of the official EFL podcast is Rick Parry saying on Football Focus at the weekend, there are no plans for an EFL circuit breaker. But I suppose, Pruts, that'll be subject to government guidance as well, because let's be honest, as soon as we publish this particular episode, you know, things could move at government level, and who knows what the future holds.
We're back now, Clem, to the position where we're discussing this, and I obviously laugh there, and it's not a laugh of any form of humour in it. It's a frustrated noise more than anything, because for so long, given the amount of times and the nice chances we've had to sit and chat about stuff like this, you always have to kind of box it in with regards to the broader sense of what is right for the wider public health. And we've all known that for such a long time now. And I think everyone in football understands that. And we understand where it fits and how important it is and what needs to be done with it and all that type of stuff. But we also understand that it is absolutely at the mercy of somebody who is in charge, in theory, coming on and saying, well, what you could do, you now can't do from this date forth, and we'd like you to do this and X, Y, and Z. And like I said, this is in no way trying to guide this down a political stream at all, but in the sense of the football governing body, as in the EFL, and then obviously with the Premier League and with the FA, it needs to be in that position where, as you're saying, to get these games on, that we, from a purely footballing perspective, we of course want to play as many games in as normal a way as possible. But we do understand that it does operate in the sense of, if suddenly, in the wider public sense, things have to be changed, the mood, and people have to stay away from each other, we then know that then the contingency kicks in, doesn't it, from the point of view of what then the governing bodies then say after that. Because the more you think about it, and maybe it's from a relevancy point of view when you look towards international tournaments, with the greatest respect to teams and some teams and players in the EFL, Qatar and and Nations League stuff in the summer and moving forward into next year might not have the same kind of bearing. But we're, again, it's back to being that pyramid. We're all part of the same family of the whole thing, and everyone should be afforded the same courtesy, the same duty of care. And if it's not in the public health interest, regardless of what division we're talking about, then that absolutely should come first. But if they can, by hook or by crook, and as we know, financially, everything that revolves around a football match, everyone involved in putting a game on, and I think what everyone did so well, and I think we spoke about it off the back of getting football restarted, what everybody did, and that common goal of getting football back on, even though we know exactly where it stands in the kind of social construct of what it is to be a human being. People did everything. They did their utmost to get it on. They did bent over backwards. You went to football matches. You'd have been around training grounds, and they were weird, sterile, unemotional, odd places to be. Especially when you go there, and at the best, the greatest example of what human life involves and what it's all about. People together sharing a common goal and a common experience. So if it resorts back to that, we know we can get these games on, we know we can get them covered, but it just, as ever, takes away from what it is, which is a shared communion, which is an utterly glorious thing. But again, we're at the mercy of greater powers than even you, Clem.
I try my best. What I will say is I think this is a little microscope into society as a whole, because I spoke to a lot of managers in the last week, and I'll speak to one who's wrestling with the new red protocols, then I'll speak to another saying, well, we've been doing that for weeks and weeks, we've been leaving the bi-folding doors open to let the air in, we've been having players at separate tables, you know, why is so-and-so club not doing it? And then I'll speak to somebody else
having wine and cheese, I hope not.
Well, not having wine and cheese, obviously. That is the preserve of government. I thought you said you weren't going political. It's time to move on.
The sad thing is, I love wine and cheese.
And it's completely wine and cheese. It's completely tarnished the image of wine and cheese, hasn't it? I tell you what, there must be a lot of cheese in Downing Street, because it seems as though they eat it at every verse end and meeting, don't they? I tell you what, let's celebrate almost the halfway point in the season today, regardless of whether games are going to be played on Boxing Day, on the 28th, 29th, on New Year's Day, etc., etc. Top of the Championship, first of all. I mean, a number one line for me, I don't know about you, would be Tale of Two Strikers, first of all. I'm talking about Mitrovic and his 22 goals for Fulham, who lead the way at the moment, and Ben Brereton-Diaz, who is just having
glorious.
The season. It's just magnificent. He's up to 19 now. Is that, would there be sort of your top three talking points from the Championship so far this season?
I'd definitely say so. I think if you look at those ones that we saw doing awfully well at the top. And there's a predictability about, you look at these teams and they should be doing that, but it's always easier, I think, in theory than it is necessarily in practice. And we were at Preston the other week where Fulham had travelled and a win there would have taken them, I think, 11 points clear of third place, which kind of going, it's a big gap, isn't it? But then both have been pegged back in Fulham and Bournemouth, and It's been good for the competition of the division, I think. And I mean that with the greatest respect to the managers involved in that, because obviously they want to do their utmost and get things done and dusted and tied up by Easter time. But
no, but I know what you mean. Yeah, I know what you mean, because I had the chat with Chappers on Sports Report on 5 Live about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and we were having the same conversation every week. It was just about the inevitability of Fulham and Bournemouth. So as much as Fulham didn't want to draw 4 in a row, as much as Bournemouth didn't want to take just 6 points from the last possible 24 after that unbeaten start to the season, it hasn't half helped to close the pack up and keep... Well, it's given us something to talk about other than your glasses, David, hasn't it?
Yes. Sure. Which are 2020 apparently, but with what Mitrovic has done, he's I've got so much time for the way that he plays football. He does a thing that, as an ex-pro, I found very hard to do, but he makes it look so very easy, which is putting the little round thing in the big netty thing with the bars on it. So he's done, and I think if you look as well, if you look at his international record, and obviously we're kind of lent towards Harry Kane and what he can do for our country and what he can do for English football and where he's going to get to, horrendous tackles notwithstanding. I think what he's the record that Mitrovic has got at international level is phenomenal, really. Goals to games ratio, and he carries that into the Championship. There's a huge question mark, of course, about the first one is him personally. Has he got the level to play in the Premier League? And secondly, is he at a team that actually gets the best out of him in the Premier League? And you'd have to say possibly no. That, if you're a Fulham fan, is hopefully a debate that they're having going into next season after having gained promotion. But if you take Blackburn as well, the slow burner that has been Ben Brereton-Diaz, and I mean that with the greatest respect, because you forget that, I mean, £6 million they forked out on him, and Tony's was always of the opinion that there was a player in there that was almost kind of bursting to get out, which, I mean, to do it in the way that he's done and taken another continent by storm as well is phenomenal, really, isn't it? And he's a very... And I don't know whether this has got any substance in it at all, but he strikes me as a very likeable footballer. He's got a bit of character about him, a bit of a throwback in a lot of ways. And what he's done with Blackburn, and again, Blackburn would be one of those sides. You look, we talked about the expectation levels of those three at the top. Blackburn are in that nice position. Coventry saw it earlier on in the season. Huddersfield at times have flirted with the top six. Teams that don't have the expectation levels on being knocking on the door of the top two. But I think given how kind of bunched up it is from third downwards. And as much as we get into the stage of the season that we claim, we go, oh, well, this could be one of the most open ones we've seen. This really does feel like it could be. It really does feel like we could have teams up there in the top six knocking on the door that if you'd have said them at the start of the season, people looking at it like you're crazy. But it's who deals with the onslaught of what we're seeing at this moment in time and who can deal with pressure as and when it manifests itself. But Blackburn have been a joy to watch, and also... I was reading Tony's comments about after the Fulham game when they got well and truly put to bed, obviously with 10 men for a vast majority of that. But there was only one way to respond to that for him, and that was to come out swinging. And my God, they've done that, haven't they?
They certainly have. And just to illustrate the point of how the Packers closed up, because Blackburn play at Hull on Boxing Day, subject, of course, to what we've just been talking about, Bournemouth don't play until the day later, so Blackburn could actually be in the top two by the end of Boxing Day. I'm loath to do preview of any fixtures at all because obviously they're all scheduled, but we just don't know where we're going to head. Should Bournemouth fans be worried? The shades of last season, great start, went off the boil as we headed towards Christmas. It cost Jason Tindall his job. I'm not suggesting that Scott Parker is in any danger, because obviously he was a man much coveted, but it is quite dramatic to fall away in such a way. It's not starting to feel less a blip and heading into crisis proportions, isn't it?
That's the thing, isn't it? It's when does a blip become a slide, become a crisis? That's what's happened over the last few weeks. It was interesting because Scott was talking about self-belief of the group after the game on Saturday. And, I mean, make no mistake about it, they should have been at least 2-0 up at half-time in that game, even though we saw Borough start very well and had a great chance for Matt Crooks early on as well, which was very well said. But what Borough did so well in the second half, it's a cliche about, and it's in the vernacular of footballing cliches now, is about managing the game. And they did very, very well with that. They made Bournemouth look quite timid, I thought, in the second 45, which reflects possibly what Scott's talking about, self-belief. But there's a group of players there that is one of the better squads in the Championship, and if they are going through a patch where belief might be a bit of a problem, then that's a big test for them as they're possibly going to come up against. Yes, I think absolutely right, shades of last season and also what happened in the playoffs. That's the thing, when you see a team get so close one year, there's that real necessity to make sure that come the last round of fixtures, they are in the top two and don't have to deal with what we love so much about the playoffs, which is the element of the unknown, the fragility of the situation. So I think they will be very wary of that. But again, we talk about Scott, and it feels like Scott's been around a long time now, but we are still seeing a younger manager still working his way into the real meat of his managerial career. So again, another part of the learning curve for him to make sure the players don't drop off.
Indeed. I know that we're tight for time, being brutally honest with listeners to the official EFL podcast. We had some slight technical problems in getting me connected. I know you want to go and see your mum and dad and various family members today. So I'm going to give you a third question from me about the championship, but feel free to weave in any other points to your answer in that mercurial way that you do. I'm going to throw Nottingham Forest at you. Are they the ones to watch? 1 point from the first 21. It is 9 wins in 16 since and sit on the cusp of the playoff places. But yes, as I say, feel free to weave through the Coventries and Stokes and wherever you want to go with this answer, David.
Well, I think we'll start with the Forest angle, because I think what Steve's done there, and let's make no bones about it, there was a good squad there for him to work with. So as much as you see a managerial change and whatever a manager brings in, players do have to take responsibility. It was a certain set of players that weren't playing as well as they are now, which, whether that's motivation, whether that's structural, whether that's a case of players seeing what they could possibly do under a different manager, whatever. I'm sure to Forest fans, they're not bothered at all, because what Steve's put together feels the beginnings of something very, very special. I saw him a couple of days after he'd been, about a week or so after he'd been appointed, and he was just... There was a pleasingly awestruck vibe about him, about how he looked at the place. He said about the first home game when all the fans were singing before kickoff, really. And he's managed in big games. He's managed in front of big crowds. But as the trendsend and the A block came and engulfed him in this huge kind of wave of sound, he said he had to just kind of compose himself for 10 or 15 seconds, thinking, bloody hell, this is a big football club. And we all know that. We all know where it stands in the great tradition of English football. And I know that it's touched base with a lot of the men that put the club on the map. I'm talking about the legends of the late 70s, early 80s that conquered Europe. So he understands what history and tradition means to that football club. He also understands that they've been away from the Premier League for the best part of 20-odd years, over 20 years. So now is about time to start pulling the fingers out. So what he's done to harness that power has been fantastic, I think. And he was also, and you'd have spoken to him, Clem, as mild-mannered and as lovely as he is, there is an undercurrent of, I hesitate to use the word bite, but that backbone that's needed, that hint of menace that comes with needing to operate and survive in football. He came out of Swansea, and I've said this before to another colleague of mine, where Russell Martin goes in, and who, again, he's got a fantastic way of playing football, a lot of time for Russell and what he's done and how he wants to create and build football clubs. And I think Steve was a bit miffed that the general lazy consensus was that, oh, look, Swansea are playing in a completely different way and it's more easy on the eye. And he sat there thinking, hang on, did you see the squad that we took to the playoff semi-finals, then the playoff final? And then they wanted me to go again with even less players the following season, hence the fact that he probably came away. So he's got a point to prove, which I think is a nice sweet spot for a manager to be in, to feel a little, not offended, but... giving that sense of something to say, well, hang on, this is what I do, and can you appreciate what I do with this group of players? And they're moving forward very well indeed. Coventry, what Mark's done with them so far, I think has been miraculous. Again, a team that operates with less expectation, but at the start of the season was thriving. Maybe sometimes the hectic nature of what the Championship can catch up to teams. You talk about Stoke City as well. It feels like this is Stoke's best hit an early portion of the Championship since they came down. There were so many different squads that needed to be worked through, so many different sets of personnel from different managers. It feels like Michael, obviously working with the players that he's got and being able to get his version of what he wants into that football club, has served them well. But I think the umbrella over the top of all this, you can work this all the way back up to possibly Fulham with Mitrovic. The minute that somebody in January says, we quite like the look of those, well, Mitrovic, how much would you get Mitrovic for? How much? Yeah. What would Ben Brereton Diaz cost now? What can we get? And if you move a little further down, you look at Borough, maybe keeping an eye on what Jed Spence is doing down the right hand side with Brennan Johnson at Forest, going, oh, we could do with him back at the Riverside. Can we work a way out of bringing him back and trying to get something going for us up in the North East? So all of this comes with the caveat of these teams being at the end of January relatively unscathed when it comes to personnel.
Yeah, which they may not be. And just to finish the championship, I mean, just QPR as well. If anybody may lose momentum as a result of COVID, you would look at them, wouldn't you? Because they've been on a fine run. Suddenly they're the first ones that have to sort of cancel two in a row. And you just don't know whether they end up with one of those sticky catch-up periods like Rotherham had at the back end of last season, which you could argue cost them relegation.
Well, I think it did. And I felt for Paul in that because it seemed at the end of last season we were talking to him every two or three days going, so there's another chance. He'd be like, yes. And then by the end of it, bless him, you know what it's like, Clem, when you watch it on TV, it's all very clean and boxed off and edited. But we have the pleasure of seeing the manager either trudge up to the boardings or come skip. Obviously, 3 points, he's skipping up his high five and everyone. Paul was just, he said to the two reporters that we've got, who were fantastic, David Craig and Jonathan Oakes, were just like, hi, lads. and even our reporters are going, sorry, we have to ask you these questions. And he took it in great spirit, but he was like, it's the same as it was 3 days ago. We're still struggling with this. We still want to do that. And I can see the point that you're making. And given what we've seen with QPR, and obviously Mark had to deal with being away from the players as well, to deal with his own little bout of COVID and everything that's going right off the pitch as well with regards to the training ground, you'd hope it wouldn't derail them, because there's a very exciting team there, which I've got a lot of time for watching. You'll always get goals when you watch them. It's just about them being able to put that consistent 90 minutes together, which I think across the board, and I was having this chat with Alex Neil about it actually at the weekend, who I think is, whoever gets him next as a manager is in for a real treat, because I've got such a respect and a fondness for the way that he can discuss football succinctly. He can explain it to morons like me very quickly indeed, which really does help.
I think you'll find he has the knack of explaining it to two morons like you and me over several beers after the final until very late at night.
Yeah, it depends how moronic you think you can be after when you get to the early hours of the morning. But he was saying about the teams that he's seen, and as you can talk about the teams that are up there, the clash of the week between Fulham and Bournemouth was a cracking game of football, wasn't it? But there's a lot of games that you see where the ones that are out there in the front and presumed to be making relatively light work of the championship, that consistent 90 minutes, I don't think has been there. It's not been prevalent over the course of the season. You've had good pockets of 40 minutes here and there or kind of portions in each half, but I'm yet to see a team really take another team to the club. Obviously, I've already mentioned the Blackburn-Fulham game. That's mitigating circumstances, I think, in that. And that was a big old score that was put up by Fulham. But over the course of the season, you get the team that can dominate larger parts of the matches being at the top, which sounds a lot like common sense. But as I said earlier on, it's easier in theory than sometimes it is in practice.
Just a couple of quick questions on Leagues 1 and 2. And you've already mentioned Rotherham in Sky Bet League 1. I mean, I guess the outstanding theme in that division is the kind of, for me, less expected teams. All right, Sheffield Wednesday are just outside the playoffs. Portsmouth have been on a good 9-match unbeaten run. Sunderland obviously are in there, but their fans expect them to be there and probably romp away. But we should pray, shouldn't we, how on earth Paul Warne does look as though he's managing to do it again on a long unbeaten run himself. On Wigan, and I would say Liam Richardson, probably the surprise package of the season, that Gareth Ainsworth it seems as though he's keeping Wickham in contention, let alone we've got the Oxfords in there and the Plymouths. It's that is that theme, the sort of less expected being up there at the halfway point?
I also think as well, if you look at who's going to be in charge now, obviously then at Plymouth with Stephen Schumacher taking over after Ryan's come back up to the northwest, and Liam stepping out of the shadow of Paul Cook, who, as we know, is a huge, huge personality. He casts a long shadow with teams and clubs that he works for in the right possible way, I think, because he runs them in his own image. So you've got managers stepping forward into their own bit of limelight and taking teams forward. As we know, with Gareth and Paul, men and managers that have been at clubs a very long time, and that in itself, I think, is a tremendous accolade to have, given how precarious the profession is, isn't it? And it seems now it's one strike and you're out. It's not necessarily time and patience that are being afforded to managers, but Paul knows how to get that team out. The real conundrum, I think, and this is me looking at in a broader sense of, and hopefully knowing a little bit about the mentality of how Paul runs a football club and runs a football team, that championship nut is something that I think he's not putting this season out of the way and thinking it's done and dusted, but that'll be the real thing that gets the grey matter working for him about how do we kind of make sure that is where we belong or where we should stay for longer than a season. And I'm not being condescending when I say that at all, because the element of getting promoted is a wonderful achievement in itself, and what they've done with and how they're going about it, and the style of football that they're playing as well. He's got a very obvious character to the way that his team wants to play, and again it's another one that's easy on the eye, because nowadays it's not just about winning, because we're all pundits, we're all experts, we've all got forums to be able to say X, Y, and Z about a team. But now it sometimes seems at times that winning isn't enough. It's about how teams win, and I understand that you pay money, you go into the stadium, you want there to come out and to be entertained, and also obviously to paramount is getting the 3 points. But I think what he's done and how he's gone about it, Wigan being in a pleasing position where we're talking just about football. Sunderland, I think, is always a great debating point, because you've got a feisty manager in there who wants to be successful, who believes that the way that he goes about his job should create success, and he demands it of his players. But then you've got fans that have seen that team in the top half of the Premier League in the not too distant past. So that's what Lee's got to deal with. And in Gareth, and like we said with Stephen at Plymouth, and obviously all the way down to Oxford Wednesday and Pompey, teams there that believe they should be higher than they are, but they're not. So plenty of work for those to do.
Sky Bet League 2. I suppose we should try and finish this football chat on a positive. Obviously, Forest Green Rovers flying, Northampton doing well to bounce back. I think I would pick out Sutton United, because nobody expected them to get promoted to the Football League last season. They had a little bit of a wobbly start, didn't win in their first four, and I think everybody was going, oh, you go, you've hit your level and things. But 11 wins in their 18 matches since, that is hellish form. Just goes to show the power of momentum, David.
It does, and there's that there's an element as well of the novelty factor of being a Football League club. The one nearest to me, as you know, Clem, is Harrogate, and what they've managed to do to climb into this division and look like part of the furniture, look like part of the piece, don't they? So it's funny, again, discussing all matters EFL, and you look at possibly the higher end of the Championship, where there's lots of debates, lots of politics, lots of off-the-field chat going on about teams and getting into the Premier League and what the Premier League has to offer and what some teams believe the Championship to be, i.e. they feel bigger than the Championship. But then the other side of it is kind of going, well, if you're too good for the Championship, and I say this slight tongue-in-cheek, well, just get yourself promoted then. Then you don't have to moan about it.
Pretty simple, isn't it?
Obviously, that's a lot harder than it looks. But there'll be teams, and again, I'm not saying this in a twee way or to belittle these teams at all. There's teams that are climbing into the Football League going, my God, we're a Football League club now. And that, in the English Football League, that has residents all around the world. That the matter, I'm not saying you've got, again, with the great suspect, huge pockets of Sutton United fans or Harrogate fans that are hanging out on the Copacabana going, yeah, oh, brilliant, they're in the league now. We're, you know what I mean, town all
there'll
the way.
One or two.
Like
there'll be one or two pruts, I bet you.
But there is that cachet, isn't there? And it's what we know and love, and what it's been built on for such a long, 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 long time, that these teams that get into it and have that momentum carried forward and then suddenly become teams that are part of this wonderful kind of divisional family that we've got, that we all care very, very deeply about. And of course, Sutton, known for being giant killers of FA Cups of yesteryear, and now a Football League team in its own right, I think is fantastic. And given where they are, third in the division, is a phenomenal. The big question, Clem, without sounding that air of cynicism that you didn't want to end this bit on, is how do you keep momentum going? That's the magic ingredient, isn't it, with football? And the great thing is, it's amazing what, and just kind of thinking back from my own experience of fanning around on a football pitch, if you had good runs, some managers you'd do the same things. So the week would look exactly the same. And they'd probably call it good, solid prep. But the underlying factor is the most superstitious bunch of people you're ever going to cook. Same bench. Yeah, but we didn't make any subs. Yeah, but same bench. The way that he warmed up and went past the fourth official, yep, let's do that again. Let's go. Let's at the same time for team meetings. Do X, Y, and Z, and then after, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, when that just disappears, and the, you're looking at, so we're all then looking at the manager going, and he's kind of thinking, can't we all just play like that all the time? Well, no, because we're in League One, and if we played like that all the time, we'd be in the Premier League. that's good, because that's how it happens. The players that don't only become marginally more skillful, they just become more reliable. That's what you get paid top dollar for. The manager knowing that you're going to get 7 or 8 out of 10 out of this player for 90% of the season. Boom. That keeps him in the job. That keeps the people above him happy. Anything after that's a bonus. But the that wonderful kind of stardust of what momentum is can come and go so very, very quickly. And I think if you look at teams up and around there, Forest Green's the one that sticks out for me. Obviously, a very, very unique football club, a very unique owner, a real personality to the way that they're approaching it. The heartbreak of playoffs, they seem right now not wanting to tempt fate for that wonderful part of the world, on course to leapfrog that and get part of their next journey, which, again, given where they've come from and where they want to be, is so very unique and so very bespoke to what we like in the EFL.
You painted a wonderful picture of a comfort zone, of repeating good habits when you are on a good run. Does comfort zone come to mind when we're describing a Prutton family Christmas? Are you up and you're into your house onesie and your fluffy slippers and you sit there and wait for a luxurious breakfast to be brought to you?
Yeah, a bit of Bailey's, a bit of Bucks Fizz. I've just said two just things that are
at once, David, at once? You'll have the Bucks Fizz and the Bailey's at the same time? That seems like a sickly mix, if I may say.
It's awful, isn't it? I'm surely one of them would curdle the other. Anyway, I'll debate that on my other podcast, the cocktail Christmas cocktail podcast, available on all rubbish platforms.
Don't people will be going out looking for it, won't they? They'll be joking, folks. Imagine? Don't spend your whole Christmas
crushingly disappointed or happy that nothing else exists with my voice on it that's going to get on the nerve. We're at the stage now where we've got a 10 and a 12-year-old, so. They've both been very forthright in what they would like and what would like to come from the big man himself.
Well, that's good. That's good, isn't it? If they can tell Father Christmas what they want in clear detail, it makes it far easier, particularly in these times of ordering online, yes.
Exactly. Never seen so many vans up and down our street. But it is pretty much, hopefully, to be as normal as possible, which, again, it kind of, without wanting to go full circle and get us crawling under the COVID umbrella once again, as long as it's something akin to that, Clem, plenty of football on, hopefully. I've always enjoyed this time of the year, whether it's been playing or covering the football, because it's just what I've been involved in since I was 16. So you kind of, it's a very unique, and again, I know we're chatting all things EFL, but it is something that feels very unique about English football in this country. We all love football at Christmas, don't we? We might moan a little bit about it, and I mean, God bless the Bournemouth fans that got up at whatever time to get to Borough.
1:30 to get.
Logistically, it's as we know, literally miles away, there was about 400 fans, and what we saw was. It must have been a stag do, because there was two dressed as Santa, one dressed as, I think, a turkey, and then we had a bottle of tequila. No, we didn't actually have a bottle. There was one dressed as a bottle of tequila, Super Mario, and another. And you know when they come, and then kind of stood there and as the game carried on and progressed. And it just absolutely incorporates the spectrum of emotion that comes with watching your football team on a 600-mile round trip back down to the South Coast. Obviously, we as the broadcasters, they're quite vocal about bits and bobs out, which is beyond my control. So, I mean, if anyone ever comes up to me and asks why Borough are playing Bournemouth at 12:30 on a Saturday morning, please do know that I have nothing to do with any of these picks again. So I just kind of crack on and hopefully you get the sense that the game becomes right in the centre of it all on Paramount, because that's what we're all there for. And we love covering football in the way that we do because of all the little stories that are involved in that. It was that pre-Christmas Saturday for Bournemouth fans up at Borough. I don't know whether, would it stick long in the memory, or would it be by the time they got back home about 10-ish, completely sozzled and swished away. Possibly that the second one, I think.
Yeah, long way. You wouldn't have wanted to have had to empty the chemical toilet on the bus after that journey, would you? Shall we just leave it at that? Merry Christmas, David.
Merry Christmas, Glenn. Have a very good one, my friend. And to everyone out there that's listening, the same to you all. And as ever, stay safe.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to David Pratton and indeed to you for listening throughout 2021. If you've enjoyed the experience, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Whatever the festive fixtures do or don't hold for you, Merry Christmas and join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.